coming out of the closet. It's something that we all do or are called to do in different ways. I was listening to an interview with the comedian Gerard Carmichael, who, among other things, has a stand-up show where he literally comes out on stage in the stand-up show. It's a really beautiful, like, intimate, personal show. And I was listening to an interview with him, and he said, I think everyone is in the closet about something. And I think that's absolutely true.
Welcome to Cosmic Clowns, a podcast about exploring consciousness, surviving chaos, and finding the comedy in it all. I'm Sebane Selassie, a writer, a teacher, an aspiring clown, and a cha-cha lover.
And I'm Jocelyn K. Gly, a writer, an energy worker, an idea lover, a mountain climber, and a student of spiritual comedy. In today's episode, we are going to explore the concept of coming out of the closet. Now, to be clear, I am a queer person, and I will let Sebane speak for herself about how she identifies, but this will not just be a conversation about that kind of coming out of the closet. Yes, we will talk about queerness and sexuality and initiations, but we're also interested in interrogating the broader meanings of coming out of the closet that pertain to every single one of us. The utility and the necessity of personas and masks, and when it may be time to take them off. Jung's concept of the shadow and the shameful parts of ourselves that we hide. Our collective rejection of all that is too, quote unquote, woo-woo or out there. And even how we can get locked into brand identities that suppress the full expression of ourselves. So that's a little sketch of where we're headed today. Before we dive in, I want to do a little check-in. Sebane, how are you doing today?
Ah, thank you. Before we started recording, you mentioned that song, Easy Like Sunday Morning, and that felt very sweet because I'm feeling that. I had like a really nice morning of just getting up, doing some reading of some Jungian writing I'm really into right now, and preparing some stuff for dinner for a friend who's coming over later. And yeah, and also getting ready, as you know, I'm going into two big consecutive surgeries. I'm having my hip replaced again, twice in a row in the same hip. So it's a lot, and I think I would be more overwhelmed if I weren't so relieved that I finally have an answer to like what the fuck is going on in my body, which is a major infection that somehow has not made me like pass out every 5 minutes. And it's really kind of a marvel that I'm standing. And hopefully this will relieve a lot of the fatigue and pain. Mm-hmm. And so doing a lot of scheduling of like care around that, including with you. So thank you. How are you doing today, Jocelyn?
I am well. And yeah, also just want to say very much wishing you smooth, swift recovery and everything with all of that.
Thank you.
I'm feeling good today. I am I'm standing today instead of. And I just kind of remembered this about myself today when I started my first podcast very slowly back in 2017. I think I realized pretty quickly that it is much easier for me to sort of use the fullness of my voice and just to like feel a lot more comfortable if I'm standing. And that's also the way that I, you know, have some of my best conversations. Like I love to be walking side by side with someone through the woods or something like that. So I'm really excited just to be like standing today and see how that affects how I show up. I think it just makes me
all
feel
right.
Like,
I think I need to join you.
Oh my gosh, you have a standing desk.
Yes,
you can do it.
And I started standing teaching.
Yeah.
which I almost always do. But since this recent pain this year, I kind of stopped doing that. I also haven't been teaching online as much. But
yeah, that was kind of the big thing for me when I started teaching on Zoom during the pandemic, was I had to figure out how to do a standing setup. And it was funny because there were like many people who took courses with me who were teachers, and they were like, whoa, you're standing. Like, you know, you're just kind of used to sitting and being on Zoom. So that just didn't like kind of occur to them. And they were like, oh yeah, like then I can kind of teach in my normal way, you know? Oh, and this is nice. We're getting like a whole new color palette behind you in the
painting. Well, you know, and speaking of what we were talking about earlier in terms of my control freakness, you can't see. Oh, no, the mic is still. My floor is crooked. And because I'm a control freak, I'm coming out of the closet as a control freak. It drives me crazy.
7A and I both apparently really are obsessed with having things aligned properly. I don't know if you've
heard. I'm so glad you didn't say having things straight.
Not obsessed with that. We'll get into that. But yeah, there's actually a term for like when you do it on your desk, like called knolling with a K, I think after like knoll design, where like if you have to have everything kind of at right angles on your desk and the act of like straightening them all is called knolling.
Just further proving that I am a gay man inside.
Are you ready? You're standing.
Oh, sorry. My cue. Okay. So coming out of the closet. As you said in the intro, a kind of more broad term than just sexuality, but how would you describe it and how have you experienced it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a variety of different concepts for me. It was funny, in preparation for this conversation, I did a little search in my notes app on my phone, which I use like incessantly. I just was going through my notes from 2025, and I have like 740 something notes. And I searched the word closet, and I think there were like 12 or 14 notes or something where I had used that term. And, you know, one of the layers for me as a queer person is I kind of think about the idea of coming out of the closet as a kind of queer technology. You know, this idea that as queer folks, we are all kind of, I don't want to use the word forced, called, you know, with a lot of sort of pull and intensity to, you know, this act of coming out of the closet, right? And you find yourself in this situation where you know something about your identity and yourself and who you are and how you want to show up in the world that maybe everyone around you doesn't necessarily see or doesn't necessarily recognize or doesn't necessarily acknowledge. And you're in that position of, okay, like I want to express myself or show up in this way, but will I be accepted if I do it right by all of these people around me? And, you know, depending on, you know, what time it is, what era, depending on your, the location of your country, depending on your location in like a rural or an urban area or whatever community, you know, you happen to be inside of, you know, taking that step into, you know, fully recognizing your queerness or transitioning, you know, can create circumstances where, you know, you are kind of, you know, excommunicated from the group or rejected from the group, or maybe your safety becomes threatened. You know, that's not in all cases. And certainly, you know, here in 2025, depending again on like where you live, you know, it can be, I think, a much lighter transition for some people. But yeah, I kind of think about it as this queer technology, and it's sort of this intense initiation that we all get. And I think of it as a technology because it's not just limited to queer folks, right? Coming out of the closet, it's something that we all do or are called to do in different ways. I was listening to an interview with the comedian Gerard Carmichael, who, among other things, has a stand-up show where he literally comes out on stage in the stand-up show. It's a really beautiful, like, intimate, personal show. And I was listening to an interview with him, and he said, I think everyone is in the closet about something. And I think that's absolutely true. And I think it, you know, so I think aside from being a queer technology, and I use the term technology because I think having had that one formative experience of coming out is a kind of, you know, strengthening, right? And so when you need to sort of come out of the closet about other things in the future, you have some experience to call on, right? And to know that you weren't sure you were going to be accepted if you revealed this part of yourself. And then hopefully, like, you found your place in your existing community or in a new community. And so you have that that kind of courage maybe to do it in other ways. And so I think there's that piece, but I think there's also the piece of, and we can maybe get into this more later, like the shadow and, you know, this idea of the shameful things about ourselves that we keep in the closet because we're worried that we won't be accepted, which can be any number of things. And also this idea of coming out of the closet as sort of, you know, ever deepening or maybe even ever lightening waves of awakening and of shedding and of integrating, and maybe of integrating those shadow parts. Those are all the things that come up for me. What about for you?
Oh my goodness. Well, first of all, so much there. It's so rich and deep and powerful. And I love this idea of this technology, or, you know, it's almost like magical tools in a way of like navigating. I don't play video games or role-playing games, but it seems like these, you know, these tools you pick up and can have powers, you know, and
weirdness.
As you were, really? Yeah. In all the ways, you know.
I like that.
And it reminds me of, I hadn't thought of this when I was thinking about this recording today, but I write about this in my book, the time when my best college friends, Naomi, Peter, and I were walking around Montreal one night, and I didn't mention in the book that we were on mushrooms, but I don't know why I didn't. There you go, coming out of the closet mushroom eater.
Yeah, will they trust me, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, okay, we can get into that, but there's also like translation and code switching and who can hear what, when, you know.
Correct,
and,
totally.
So that, you know, let's bookmark that. But Naomi's Japanese Canadian. I'm obviously Ethiopian Eritrean American, and Peter is a gay white man. And we were walking past some skinheads, and there was a lot of neo-Nazi skinheads in Montreal at the time. Or I don't know how many of them there were, but they were like beating up immigrants and gay people. And so, you know, it's just some caution around that. And as we were passing them, Peter had a little ball cap on, and he had two male symbols intertwined and a pin. It was tiny, but he took off his hat as we passed them. And then, like, totally high on mushrooms, he turned to me and Naomi, and he was like, oh my God, you guys can never take off your hats. And it was this, you know, recognition of that capacity to come out and go back in as needed. Mm-hmm. And obviously, not all queer people can do that for various reasons, but that ability to pass that some of us don't have in terms of what we're grappling with in terms of, you know, our identity or the things that may put us in threat or danger or expulsion or rejection. So that's what came up with as you were speaking, among many other things, because of what you were talking about. But yeah, I'm curious. If there's anything you want to share about your coming out story that sort of points to some of the themes you were naming.
Well, I definitely came out and went back in and came out again. You know, I don't know if I want to go through the whole coming out story. It is very, it is a very amusing story in certain ways. Part of the awakening for me was that I was like out So this is in my like early 20s. I'm like out dancing with some friends, and one of them was a friend who's a woman. And I remember like we were just dancing and she was like, "You're cute." And like, I didn't have to read it in like a romantic way, but I kind of did. And there was something about the, a woman expressing her attraction to me or expressing that she found me attractive, that like kind of opened a door for me to feel like I was allowed to find her attractive. And I don't know why that was like what it took, because for me, and I think this is true for so many queer people, after you come out, like you'll look back on these like same-sex friendships that you had and you'll be like, oh, like, okay, I see what was going on there, you know, like, and it will be like, you know, you'll be kind of in this kind of unconscious dynamic with someone that is very much like reflecting your queerness, but maybe you don't know that you're queer yet. Which is certainly the case for me. I didn't come out until after college, and I grew up all over the country, but I was in high school in Texas. And at the time, and
the queerest state.
Yeah, and probably still not now, not very queer friendly. And yeah. I think I was in a school of about 2,500 people, and there wasn't a single out person in the entire school. So, and I didn't suspect then that I was queer. And, you know, on a certain level, I'm kind of grateful for that because I didn't feel that I had to hide it, or I didn't have to have sort of this internal dynamic about like, what should I do about it? By the time that I came out, I was at school in Boston. And so that was a much sort of friendlier environment. So there's that interesting piece about kind of like someone else sort of reflecting a possibility to me. And one of the other pieces that came up for me that was so sweet, basically what sort of happened for me is I developed this crush on this person who had complimented me on the dance floors, you know, sort of a hopeless friend crush. And this other person, I had a boyfriend, this person had a boyfriend. I don't think anything was ever going to happen, but there was also a sense in which she, I think, was unconsciously sort of encouraging my attraction. And so I realized that I was queer. I was never like, oh, I'm just attracted to this woman. I was like, oh, okay, like I think I'm gay. And there's a whole internal dialogue about that. But anyway, eventually I ended up telling my boyfriend and separating from him. But then we ended up getting back together because he was sort of like my best friend. And I was like so sad that I'd lost my best friend. But also I didn't have any queer friends and I didn't have any queer community. So it was sort of like, you know, you're kind of like, ta-da, you know, and it's like, crickets, you know, like, what am I going to do now, you know? And so I ended up kind of like going back in. And then I came out, I don't remember when, but like a year or two later, and I was then in New York City. I had a queer roommate. So there was this just kind of really different context. And then to wrap that up, there was just one other moment I was thinking about. And again, this idea of someone sort of opening a door for possibility. I had this friend who was very much kind of a clown herself, very funny, very magnetic. And she obviously knew that I was gay, but, you know, not out yet. And we were out at a bar having a drink. And I remember she just turned to me and she said, well, so like, I'd broken up with my boyfriend. And she said, so do you think you'll be kissing boys or kissing girls next? And I was like, I think girls. But it was like such a sweet way of acknowledging that she saw me, but not like accusing me or like pressuring me. It was just like a really sweet invitation.
May all young queerdos have friends like that. Yeah, it's such a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that, because it's I didn't know any of that, so yeah. It's so sweet to have this opportunity to learn that.
What about for you? I know there's some, you have things to share in this realm as well about kind of how you're thinking about yourself.
Yeah, you know, I've written about this a little bit and talked about it in different places. I don't identify as queer, and it's really out of respect. And it came up for me. I was in a workshop many years ago with a young non-binary queer person, millennial, and we were, you know, it was a lot of people in the workshop, and we were paired up for an exercise, and we had to list our identities. I can't remember how it came up. They probably just intuited it for me. They were like, "Have you ever been with women?" They just said women. They didn't say other genders, but and I said, "Well, yeah." And they're like, "Well, why don't you list yourself as queer?" I was like, "Well, because back in the Gen X days, like, that was not okay. And there was sort of this very hard line of like, you're either gay or straight." And although I was actually a member of Queer Nation in Montreal, which grew out of ACT UP Montreal, which I was a big part of, people weren't really identifying themselves as queer. And I still have Gen X friends who will not, they're like, "I'm gay, you know, or I'm a lesbian." Like, they won't use the word queer. And it was just interesting to be in the conversation with this younger person who their kind of umbrella was so much bigger. And it was about inclusion and solidarity. Mm. And so they saw my not calling myself queer as almost like a betrayal or a denial. And I saw it as protective of what is not mine to claim. Mm. So it was kind of interesting. And I had one incident when, because I have a lot of queer friends and been with women, not much, you know, longest kind of relationship, I wouldn't even call it that, situationship I had was maybe like 3 or 4 months. But I just so relate to queer culture. And I think that if I had been given more examples of an expansive queer identity, I would have sort of quote unquote gone there. But when I was in college, I was at some LGBT, I don't even know if we added Q then. I don't even know if we had a D, maybe, I don't know, but dance. And these queer couple, the South Asian queer couple, lesbians came up to me and they were like, "What are you?" And we were friends. Like, it wasn't aggressive, but a little bit. And, you know, I couldn't define myself, you know, and I didn't really relate to the term bisexual. But again, if now I would be able to embrace the term queer for myself, and out of respect, I use queerish.
I love
and
that.
I've had many people say to me, "Well, you may not be queer, but you're definitely not straight." so, you know, I maybe come out of the closet as like a person of my time. in relationship to this conversation, and, you know, interestingly, listening to your, we're sort of the same generation ish. Like, you're a young Gen Xer, I'm an old Gen Xer, but that cusp is really different. Of like, when people come out, how they come out, what the culture around them is like coming out. I grew up with a generation of gay men who, you know, were scared shitless of AIDS, because they saw the generation before them just be decimated. So there are all these sort of factors that play into coming out of the closet. And I actually wanted to ask you and share with you, when thinking about this, I remembered a New Yorker profile I had read about Samuel R. Delaney. I think I maybe even shared it with you at the time, who is a gay, Black, elder science fiction writer. And the article is fascinating about his life, and, you know, he has a lot to say about queerness and especially male sexuality in terms of like cruising and these liminal spaces, which I think is also fascinating in terms of like, what is a closet when you're in danger when you come out, you know? And so how queer spaces, gay bars, lesbian bars are these kind of safe spaces, but then especially with gay men, these other public private spaces like the Rambles in Central Park, or, you know, certain cruising streets or areas, and and what that means in terms of how you navigate that in and out. But something in that article really struck me, because he talks about the article describes how he criticizes kind of that post-Stonewall rite of passage of coming out as oriented towards the straight world. And that there's something, and a lot of my gay male friends talk about that, like these sort of gay spaces of chem sex or just, you know, whatever, just bathhouses and cruising are that rebellion too. So how the closet can also be a space of sedition, to bring back that word from last time, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that what you're expressing from Samuel R. Delaney and something I was thinking of. So you are talking about, like, you know, queerish, like, what term do you use? What's appropriate? And then this idea of, you know, being in reaction to or sort of oriented towards straightness and the way that, you know, how we or queer folks might express ourselves. I've been thinking about this term, which I feel like is very well suited to you, around both gender and sexuality, of omni, like, I'm omni. But like, I love that as, like, you know, in the sense of all encompassing, like omnivore, but also it feels very cosmic, you know, like alien as well. You know, because for myself, I just feel very like in the middle on all of the spectrums, you know, I just kind of like this, like, idea of this kind of all-encompassing intergalactic term of omni. So something to play around with, an invitation.
And it is an invitation to, you know, I know there's like such a maybe overuse of the word queer and queering and all of that, but there's such a power in it too, that it is very kind of sneakily confrontational, like queerness in its omniness and also in its illusions. I remember Justin Vivian Bond, who's a trans performer, actor, writer, MacArthur genius, way back when she first moved to New York from San Francisco. I remember someone who I knew who performs with her said she describes herself as a gender illusionist. And I love that so much. It's always stuck with me as like such a powerful, like, twisting of these binaries and these boxes that we're forced to be in so many ways. And yeah, that Delaney sort of taking back the closet, rather than having to give it up to, you know, coming out doesn't mean then subscribing to what's here, right?
Yeah.
And
that idea of the invitation, I think, too, part of the appeal, I think, of queerness for those who maybe don't identify with queerness in terms of, you know, sexuality per se, is I think there can also be the perception that it allows for a fuller self-expression, right? Which is something that I think that we all want, and I think is a huge aspect of this idea of coming out of the closet, this idea of awakening to a fuller expression or to shedding, you know, some constrictions or to embracing the shadow side. So I'm curious to ask you, like, what are some of the different ways that you would say that you have kind of come out of the closet over the course of your life?
You know, I think as an immigrant, there were ways that I closeted aspects of my identity and tried to mask my sense or sensibilities and conform to the larger culture. And there's also a way in which I actually don't feel that connected to my culture. And so I can feel like sometimes in my immigrant cultural spaces, like I have to come out as like not like you guys either, you know, and really be able to be myself. And that's also given me so much skill. Like I often call myself a translator, and I think I'm a cultural translator, I'm a soulful translator, I'm a social translator, because I've had to navigate so many different types of spaces. And I think the most kind of recent and profound coming out that I've experienced, and I know this is something that we share, is really coming out of the closet as Wu, to really embrace all of the spiritualities. So, you know, I've been a meditator since I was a teenager, basically, and interested in Buddhism. And I didn't feel like I had to come out of the closet about that. That was always sort of like, oh, that's interesting, you know, that was sort of acceptable. But now that it's gone full on, like mindfulness, that to really honor the depth of my not only Buddhist practices, but other practices, and how rooted they are in these sort of cosmic, mythic, numinous, spiritual worldviews and experiences, not just views, and to allow for that to show up. And maybe this is where we can talk about persona and masks and the utility of quote unquote the closet, but really maybe it's not even a closet anymore. It really is like a mask, is that you don't necessarily want to be authentically your whole self all the time. It's not useful. It's not relevant. It's not safe sometimes. Like it's unhelpful to always have to be yourself all the time. And so that is sort of my work in a lot of sense now, is like, well, who can I speak to and when? And if my work is a lot about translation of cosmic consciousness and clowning and contemplative practices, then, you know, how do I frame it so that people can hear it? And I shared with you this article from Satya Doyle Biak, I think that's how you know his name, or Biak. She's a Jungian analyst, and I just started following her recently and just diving into her work. And she lives in Portland, Oregon. She was writing about the mask and personas and necessary strategy, and describing all of the inflatable costumes, challenging ice, and, you know, this sort of mask of a frog or a unicorn or whatever it is, and confronting a mask. And so this is a healthy way of engaging persona, that you can sort of put it on and take it off, and that we just acknowledging that we all play roles. Like that is part of reality. There's, yes, we may have like the large S self, that capital S self, that is maybe a core of who we are, but that's not how we move through the world. We move through the world with ego and persona and mass and these other aspects as well.
Yeah. And there can be, as you say, like real liberation in the mask or in the costume. Funny side note, I was inspired by the protest inflatables, and the last time I was at one, I was like, oh, this is so fun. And like, I think I might feel a bit more free, like to just be super kind of goofy and provocative or whatnot. So I ordered one. I got a dragon inflatable, but it was like a child size one. And I was like, pretty small. Like maybe it'll be okay. It was too small. Like the face breathing hole was like located and everything was kind of like, you know, just like clinging to like my knees and my and my
maybe
elbow.
Pablo can wear it.
Yeah,
he would hate
he'd
you.
Love that.
Yeah.
Pablo is my dog, for listeners who don't know, and he's highly sensitive, so I think he would be well terrified if I tried to put him inside something with built-in fans inside of it.
I mean, the masks is the like heart of clowning. Like the red nose, you know, I did a form of clowning that didn't involve face paint and other things, not at the level I was doing it. But everyone got a red nose. You know? And it was like, it was a character frame. Like you took it off to go back to you. Yeah. You know, and I've been thinking about was there is when the notice mm-hmm, is on.
Mm-hmm. And I think I talked to you a little bit about this. Like, I've been thinking about this idea of experimental selves, which again is sort of the concept of the persona or the mask. I've, you know, thought about for years now this idea of renaming myself. And I kind of have been toying with it and kind of moving a little deeper into it. And then I kind of pulled away from it, you know, sort of like in and out of the closet with this self. But more recently, I've been thinking about the idea of that name, which is Pascal, as being kind of an experimental self. And it's really interesting to think, well, what would Pascal want to do that Jocelyn doesn't feel comfortable doing? You know, and how can you use that idea of this experimental self, persona, costume, mask, whatever it is, to explore things that you don't feel that you can explore, you know, that you have permission to explore? So I think that's really, yeah, that's really interesting to me as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't know we were going to go here, but it really touches into, you know, the Buddhist idea of anatta or no self or not self, but every spiritual tradition has that sense of the relative of identities and who we are and the roles we play. And but then also the cosmic or absolute sense of like connection with everything. And it's almost like the idea of the experimental selves or self as illusion or, you know, self-illusionist as a space for really playing with that, you know, playing with all this possibility. And I don't know much about like carnival or shamanic practices or indigenous practices of mask wearing, but I know that that is a thing, like just losing the self in this role, this identity, you know, once a year or twice a year or however ritually, and how little space we have for that beyond like, you know, sexy cats on Halloween.
Or sexy anything on Halloween.
Sexy anything. Yeah. Like it's just,
I remember where. I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I'm picturing this video that I remember watching in my 20s, like of, it was like a spoof of like sexy Halloween costumes, you know, and it was like sexy Abe Lincoln, like sexy mustard, like, and just like the kind of absurdity of sexualizing every single thing on for Halloween.
First of all, never apologize for laughing. But yes, that's hilarious. Yeah. So, I think that's it. Just this idea of persona and mask is like an interesting way to think about closets. And okay, so maybe we want to leave the closet behind because it's this confined space, but it can also be cozy. I don't know. But then when we do come out of the closet, like what tools do we have? What technologies do we have to go forward in our quest, you know?
Yeah, I like that. What tools do we have? And I wanted to ask you kind of following on, like, okay, what are the ways in which you know, feel like you have sort of come out? Like, are there ways in which, and you, if you, there's not something to say or there's not something you feel comfortable saying, that's fine. Are there ways in which you feel you are trying to come out of the closet in certain ways right now? And I'm asking because I have some.
Yeah, I think that, I'm still trying to come out as fully myself in all of the aspects we've already named. Yeah. And then I really am trying to embrace my, I don't think it's about being experimental anymore, but really honoring that I am a writer and that means I'm an artist. And yeah. And all that entails, and the role of the writer and the role of the artist is very specific. And I think I'm still in the identity of the worker, which we're all indoctrinated into since preschool. Mm-hmm. And so how to really allow for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that, the artist, as one of the things that I'm trying to come out as, but that definitely is also on my list. You know, I think in terms of ways I've already come out of the closet, certainly queerness is obviously one and the first one, but also for me, you know, you were talking about kind of woo. But for me, the first layer was also coming out, or the second layer was coming out as a spiritual person. You know, I was so steeped in sort of that productivity space and that startup world, and just definitely in the rational mind and science. And I wasn't really raised with any type of spiritual practice. And all of that was very foreign to me. Like, I was not connected to it. I did not think about it a lot. And like many people, there was kind of a real opening to the divine and to that sphere that occurred through connecting to plant medicine. Yeah. But it was, you know, I referred to my previous podcast, Hurry Slowly, which I started in 2017. And that started out as really being a sort of interrogation after I'd kind of gone on this underworld journey into like the world of productivity and kind of become an accidental productivity expert. The podcast was really about like questioning our obsession with productivity and kind of pushing back on this overwhelmed, overstimulated way in which everyone was working. And there was a certain point at which, but kind of behind the scenes, this, you know, awareness was kind of rising in me and this connection to the divine and to spirituality. And so there was this question, which is another level, I think, of coming out of the closet that's very specific to this moment, of kind of like your personal brand and sort of getting locked in, right, to talking about a certain thing and presenting yourself in a certain way, and then feeling whatever it is, a new interest or a new consciousness coming in, and feeling quite conflicted about how to integrate that. And so for me, there was a process of literally coming out of the closet as a sort of spiritual person on my podcast, and really the whole kind of focus and energy of the podcast shifting a lot. And, you know, again, it's like, will this be welcome? Will this be accepted? You know, I've built this audience around this whole thing. You know, but I decided to move forward with it. It was just becoming such a massive part of what I was interested in the world and what I was interested in talking to people about. So that was kind of the second level, right? First coming out as a queer person, then kind of coming out as a spiritual person. And I think now for me, it's really two of the levels are comedy and crystals. You know, one is really this kind of call to comedy, call to clowning, call to the fool, and feeling very inspired by all of the, you know, performers and media I see in that space, and wanting to explore, as you and I are exploring here, sort of part of the purpose of the podcast for both of us, but also feeling that like deep awkwardness, you know, around like showing up in that way. And on the other hand, I also have this very more recently deep connection to the mineral world, to crystals, and I've started to use them in my energy practice. And I often refer to them, I don't just call everything a technology, I swear, but I refer to crystals as kind of an ancient technology. You know, I think on one of the earlier podcasts, I sort of briefly talked about this, but the idea that, you know, we feel like crystals are so woo-woo, like so out there, but, you know, the silicon that's in computer chips is crystals. We have so many crystals in our body, like the crystals in our ears that help us orient through space. Even the first radio that was ever made was basically like operating on the vibrations of a crystal. And so they are part of all of these technologies that are very familiar to us, but we aren't really necessarily conscious of it. But that's part of me that I still feel very, as you say, conscious of who I choose to talk about it with. And, you know, and of course, even talking about it here now is like a little uncomfortable, you know, because it's like people who know Hurry Slowly Jocelyn don't necessarily know that Jocelyn, you know, and like, how's that going to land? And so I think that, you know, speaks for me to the process too, right? It's not like coming out of the closet isn't an open and shut prospect, right? Like, as you say, maybe you'll come out and maybe you'll go back in, like maybe for reasons of safety, but also like, you know, you might just, it's like a really slow shimmy out through like a really tiny crack, you know, if you're like, is this okay? Is this like, can I do it? Is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? And
well,
it's just
that.
No, and it's just like an eternal, I just want to say one more thing. It's kind of this eternal process, right? Like I think about those M.C. Escher paintings with like, you know, the infinite stairwells. And I picture them with like a door, you know, where I'm like, cut, you know, like, ta-da, like I'm gay, like, you know, ta-da, I'm spiritual, like, ta-da, I'm into crystals, you know, and it just kind of keeps going in this like infinite loop.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it can be both and like, yes, you could sort of step in, step out. And there's such a power in like starting the quest. Right. And that doesn't mean that everyone can hear the signal. Like you can have many signals going and they're only audible or legible to certain people. But that doesn't mean that you don't shine the signal, you know, or don't vibrate that.
No, I think that's a great point. And it's interesting to, because it's such a question for me. Like I am very much like, oh, I'm interested in this. Like we must let it be a part of everything and like talk about it. And probably some of that is just like my privilege, like being able to have done, being able to have like expressed myself in a lot of ways throughout my life, you know? But there's like such a pull in me to, yeah, I don't know, like somehow to like make it all like public or make it all included, you know? And I don't think that's like necessarily the right thing to do, but I'm very like conflicted sometimes about how that plays out within me.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't sort of like judging or kind of critiquing making it public or not, but more so I was just going back to the idea of the closet. And whether, you know, going back to Samuel R. Delaney, if he's really critiquing coming out of the closet, or if he's critiquing then when you come out of the closet, how you orient yourself, right? Because he's saying just even the idea of coming out of the closet is orienting towards the straight world. It's like, well, no, not if you come out as a gender illusionist, you know, not if you come out as you know, a crystal hoarder and pusher and concierge. Jocelyn is an excellent crystal concierge. I have many crystals right in front of me that came from Jocelyn or her, counsel. But more so like than when we're out, like the tools we use, the persona, the mask. I also thought of maybe we should call it persona branding. Instead of personal branding.
Oh, I like it. Right? Feels a little more fungible.
Yeah. And this, the other thing that came to me is, you know, non-binary folks as really just lights and heroes and sheroes and theyros for what is possible in like coming out, right? Because it doesn't have to fit to an idea of what we think we should be based on these binaries or ideas of what's acceptable and possible. And, you know, I'm thinking of the Supreme Court ruling on passports. And I read an article by the lawyer and activist, trans activist, Chase Strangio this morning. And yeah, and just thinking about my friends who have X's on their IDs or passports, and Chase Strangio quarted Tori Peters, the writer who wrote Detransition Baby, which is an amazing novel.
So
and when she was they were on a panel and talking about, you know, if she would end up having to carry a passport classifying her as male. And she said, I don't need a pat on the back from Mark Rubio telling me I am a woman. And and that is like all trans people, but and also especially non-binary people's reality every day. And that defiance of a closet and that, you know, stepping out onto that quest daily, grabbing magical tools along the way, you know, it's very inspiring for me.
Yeah, to not need anyone's permission or sanction. Because that's so much what, and I, those are so much the moments when you realize like how you might come out of the closet, or the possibility of coming out of the closet, or the possibility of taking off a mask for a moment, is just seeing that there's something about permission there, you know, a permission that you can give yourself, or a permission that you don't actually feel like, oh, maybe I don't even need that permission, or the permission of a friend saying, you know, are you going to be kissing boys or kissing girls? You know, like just that interplay with permission really feels like such a deep part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that permission is necessary for many people, you know, and I think of Black people and folks of color in general, just constantly having to code switch. Like you learn that so young, and there's such a facility with persona and mask wearing that I think can sensitize you to other people's realities in the way that Peter's realities were sensitized to us because of our proximity and his experience. And so, yeah, that sort of solidarity in coming out across all of these differences is something that, yeah, I would love to explore more, just as a place of possibility. So what's been giving you some joy and ease or goodness lately?
I have been dancing to like one song every morning in the kitchen after I wake up. I don't do it every single day. I do it most days. And when I do it, it's just such a good enlivening practice. As we've discussed, I have to do many things to sort of remediate my mood upon waking and sort of improve it for the day.
Practices.
Yep. We're making the trucker hats. but yeah, so I usually sit and briefly meditate, and then I go dance in the kitchen. And I've been dancing to this song called Purple Hat by this duo, Sophie Tucker. And it's just like, it's so good. It's impossible not to dance to. And that's been bringing me a lot of lightness lately. What about you?
Great. Oh, yeah. We'll have to share that song in the show notes. As I mentioned to you yesterday, I've been listening to Rosalía's new album, Lux. And for those of you who don't know her, she's a Spanish musician. And her first album kind of came out, I don't know how many years ago, maybe a decade ago now, or maybe not that long, but was sort of a powerhouse storm. It was her thesis in college, but it was flamenco. And she's not Andalusian. She's, I think, from the north of Spain. And so there's also sort of questions of cultural appropriation and different things around her, but she is a force. And so regardless, she wanted to make a reggaeton album. And so same issues came up, but she's really a genius. So her latest album is, I think she sings in 14 or 15 different languages. And the album is an honoring of 14 or 15, I can't remember which number is which, women, female saints from throughout history, from different traditions. And it's epic. It's really powerful, and it's different styles of music. And it's, yeah, really moving. And just this idea of honoring, she has this one song, Divinize.
That was one of my favorites.
English. Oh, so good.
So good.
So good. So yeah, I've been enjoying that.
Yeah. I listened to it the other day on my drive at your behest, and it is so epic, and there is so much going on. And
yes,
I love that about her. Like, she just is very bold in that way. She just is like, I want to go explore this thing, and I'm going to do it, and does it in a really big way. And yeah, it just feels really inspirational.
Yeah, very cool.
You want to take us home?
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening. It's such an honor and delight to be in your ears. And it's really fun and exciting for us to venture into this new territory. And we would love your support and to hear from you, to know that you like what we're doing so that we will make more. Please like and rate this show. There are ways to do that in whatever platform you're listening or watching this on. And it really helps us to know that this is something that benefits you as much as it's benefiting us. You can follow both of us through our Substacks. Jocelyn has a beautiful Substack called Radiate. It's full of wonderful storytelling and insights and really, really boss links. And my Substack is called Remind Me to Love. And I just talk about all my foibles and adventures. Am I missing anything else, Jocelyn?
No, I think that's it. I think we can just send them off.
Send you off to, hopefully continue to find lightness and comedy in the midst of all this chaos. And we'll end with this moment of clown.
When I'm sitting in restaurants and like the pictures aren't straight, I can't mm-hmm. handle it. It's very upsetting.
Oh, and I walk into someone's home and I'm like, really? I have to walk around and like fix your fucking house for you? Like, this is us coming out as control freaks, but everybody would be like, coming out of what? Like,
we never thought anything different.
This is us coming out of our own closets to ourselves.
Yeah.